Leviticus. Tonight it's tonight's one's the we're gonna do that, and then we're gonna finish it the next time we get together for Leviticus, and then we'll be finished Leviticus. So we'll have got through as John prayed, one of the more challenging books of the Bible, when it comes to understanding it and to reading it. So tonight we're looking at chapter 23 to 25, and we're looking at the feasts. So you've heard, I'm sure, the word festival. And the word festival is actually a Latin word for the feast day. So it's a religious holiday. So when you hear the word festival, you think of like celebrations and spinning the circles. I don't know what you think about, but usually it's just a big celebration thing. And actually, it used to mean a feast day, and it comes back to your religious holiday. And the word holiday, when I say a holiday, we think of a day off, or we think of going off somewhere. I'm going on holiday. I'm going on holiday to Cornwall. Where the word holiday is holy day, it means a day that was set apart from all normal days. Okay, so as we've been looking at in Leviticus, you have those things that are normal and then those things that are set apart. And a holy day is a set apart day, a day that's set apart for religious things, for part of the yearly rituals of life in Israel, especially. So the word has changed its meaning quite a lot from what it used to mean back then. But it's a holiday, a holy day. And that's what we're looking at then this evening, is the holy days of the nation of Israel. So if we can look at this little outline here, remember we've been sort of seeing how the book of Leviticus has a sort of a pattern to it. You see the sacrifices, the priests, and then purity, then the Day of the Atonement right in the middle, then more purity, then we have the priests again, and now we have the feast days, chapter 23 to 25. Admittedly, chapter 24 has more commandments in it, but we're not going to do that tonight for time's sake. We're just going to stay in 23 and 25, most of it. So yeah, chapter 1 to 7 is the daily sacrifices, and then chapter 23 to 25 is the annual feast. So the sacrifices that would happen, some of them on a daily basis, and then a yearly rhythm for the people of Israel and how they came together to be with God and to worship Him. So at chapter 23, we're going to do first of all, and that's the feasts themselves, the different feast days that the nation of Israel partook in when they came into the land of Canaan, the land of Israel. And right back in the book of Genesis, Genesis chapter 1, verse 14, it says this: "Then God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and for years." So what we see here is that the stars, the sun and the moon, were given to separate night and day. Eventually, so this is day 4. Also then, to create the rhythm of the year, in the sense of this is the season, this is the harvest season, this is this different season, but also for signs. And it's believed by most that those signs are signs of when the feast days would be. So what is being claimed then in Genesis is that God created the world in such a way so that the nation of Israel could have their feast days. That's like the whole of creation is kind of centered around these feast days of the nation of Israel. So their feasts happened within the rhythms of the stars and the moon and the sun and different things like that as well. So it says in chapter 23, verse 2 of Leviticus, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy assemblies," or maybe your translation says holy convocations, but I've never used the word convocation outside of Bible reading, so it's holy assemblies. "These are my feasts," okay? So they're not the feasts of the nation of Israel, they're God's feasts that He invites the people of Israel to partake in, okay? So they're His feasts that He's created, that He set apart these days, and then He invites and commands His people to celebrate those days and to remember certain things about their history and about God's goodness, okay? So just to kind of help us a little bit, our calendar in the 21st century goes from January to December, but that's not how all of our calendars work. So the school calendar doesn't work that way. The school calendar goes September, and it goes all the way around to June, July time in England. So that's the school calendar. It's a bit different. And the bank calendar is different as well, isn't it? It goes from April and all the way back around again. So we're kind of used to having different calendars in our world. So we're kind of okay with this. But the first month of the year when it came to the Nation of Israel was March, April. Interesting enough, that was the same for England as well until one of the kings was like, no, we're going to make it January. So, you know, whatever. I can't remember the king, but that's what happened. So we have March, April is the first month, and then September, October time is the seventh month as well. And that's going to be helpful because we're going to see that most of the feasts happen within that time period. So just kind of like helping us see that a little bit for those who can see the screen. So we're going to cover the feasts. The first one, the first feast that the nation of Israel were to celebrate was the Feast of Passover. And it was the 14th day of the first month of the year, of the Israeli calendar year. The 14th day of the first month. It's recorded for us in Leviticus 23, verse 5. And it was a holy day, a set-apart day. And because we've looked at the Passover in Exodus, we're not going to spend a lot of time looking at the Passover again this evening. But it was a day to remember the Passover, what happened to them in Exodus. So that's the Passover feast, which and the whole nation of Israel would practice this feast, would partake in this feast, and remember that generations ago they were rescued from slavery in Egypt. That's the Passover. The very next day begins the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the 15th day of the first month, and that would last for 7 days. The 2 days would be holy days. And again, as we've looked at this already in Exodus, it's recorded here in Leviticus 23, verse 6 to 8. And during those 7 days, there'd be no leaven eaten within the assembly of the nation of Israel. All leaven would be dealt with, would be cast out from them. They did this in a celebratory way, kind of like joyfully getting rid of all the leaven, baking lots of stuff before that. And then it would be no leaven for the 7 days of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And then the next day after the first day of that, the 16th day of the first month, was the Feast of First Fruits. That's the feast, that's the harvest of barley. So barley was harvested around this period of time, the 16th day of the first month. It's recorded for us in chapter 23 and verse 9 to 14. And basically, it's what it sounds like. It's the first fruits. So the barley harvest would be collected. And no one was allowed to eat or use anything from this harvest until the first sheaf of it that had been gathered in was offered as a wave offering unto God. So we looked at wave offerings in chapter 1 to 7. And this wave offering would be presented to God, basically saying, God, we recognize that all this is yours. And we recognize that you're the one who's provided this for us. So we're thanking you for this harvest of barley. And so after that's offered, then they could eat from the barley harvest. So no one was allowed to touch it until the first offering. That's why it's called first fruits. It's the first one was offered unto the Lord, and everything else was up for grabs to eat amongst the people of Israel. That's the Feast of First Fruits. And then the fourth feast that we have is 50 days later, or 7 times 7, and then the next Sabbath day. So it's the number 7 is going to come up a lot when it comes to the feast days of the nation of Israel. So it's 7 times 7. From the Sabbaths. So it's 50 days. It's called the Feast of Weeks, or the Feast of Pentecost, the Feast of 50. And this is the wheat harvest. So 50 days later, they had a wheat harvest. It's chapter 23, verse 15 to 22. And again, it's just celebrating the fact that God has kindly and graciously provided for us the wheat harvest. We're thanking him for the provision, for his kindness, for his generosity in allowing us to survive. Now, I mean, we're having harvest. John's going to be doing our harvest sermons in a couple of weeks. And we do that once a year. The nation of Israel were doing this at least 3 times a year. They were celebrating one of the harvests, okay? So the harvest of barley, the harvest of wheat, and then towards the end of the year, the harvest of all the rest of the stuff. And it was just a celebration. They're very agricultural world. Being from the city, I don't really get it because I'm like, I just go to the shop and buy barley, whatever. But living in Somerset these last 2 years has been really a lovely experience for me. Driving down country roads, and there's like sweet corn like way high, and then like a couple months, and then like we walked through a field of barley recently, and just you begin to see like, oh wow, like this whole. We need all this stuff to survive. Like if this field doesn't have this barley, like we're in trouble. But for them, of course, it was the rhythm of the year. They were very much involved with the agriculture world. And so it was around these harvest feasts that they would celebrate God's bounty and God's goodness and his grace in providing for them. Okay. So these are the four, what's called the four spring feasts. And these four spring feasts were an annual, so every year, a reminder of God's rescue of them from Egypt and God's provision for them in Canaan. So God has rescued us from Egypt. We're free. We're his. We're no longer in bondage and slavery. And now he's brought us into the land of Canaan, the Eden land. And we're being blessed in this land. And God is kindly and graciously providing for us. So it's a yearly celebration and a yearly reminder. God has rescued us and God is providing for us. So it's really beautiful. Like, that's what we do as Christians, is we always just, we just come together to celebrate. God rescued us and God is to this day still providing for us. It's the same thing. We just do it a little bit differently from how they do it. But also, once we get into the New Testament, some significant things happen around these same periods of time. And the apostles really lean on this language for different things as well. So we have in 1 Corinthians 5:7, Christ is our Passover lamb. And we know that Jesus Christ was sacrificed around the same period of time as the Feast of Passover. Okay, so he was sacrificed around the same period of time as the Feast of Passover. So Jesus Christ is our ultimate Passover lamb. And then you have the next day, the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And again, it's speaking of Jesus. He knew no sin. In him was no sin, and he did no sin. A number of passages of scripture there. And so Jesus, during the Feast of Unleavened Bread, Jesus Christ was in the tomb, and his body saw no corruption because he knew no sin. So his body didn't decay like our bodies decay, because his body knew no sin, and therefore he was able to rise again from the dead, quoting from Psalm 16. But then through Jesus, it says in the same passage, 1 Corinthians 5:7, we've been made unleavened. So now we, who were full of leaven, the leaven of sin, are now unleavened through what Jesus Christ, the unleavened one, did for us in being both our Passover lamb and the ultimate unleavened one who knew no sin. When we come to the Feast of First Fruits, which is the next day, it says in 1 Corinthians 15:20, it's almost like Paul had a theme going on in Corinthians. He says, Christ has been raised from the dead, the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. And so this idea of Jesus Christ being the first to rise from the dead, and you could argue, wasn't there people who rose from the dead before Jesus? Well, he's the first to rise from the dead with an incorruptible body, a body that would never die. Everyone else who was raised again before him died again. So it's like, welcome back to life, Lazarus. You're going to die again one day. Oh, great. But Jesus rose again and he didn't die again. And then all those who are alive in Christ will then rise up with him one day. As the rest of that harvest, okay? So Jesus Christ is our first fruits. And then 50 days later, and again, remember, all this is happening. Jesus died around the same period as Passover. He was buried around the same period as unleavened bread. He rose from the dead the same period as first fruits. And then 50 days later, what happens in the Levitical calendar? Well, the Feast of Pentecost. And what happens 50 days later? Jesus ascends, and then we have the Feast of Pentecost. What is the Feast of Pentecost? It's a feast of gathering. And what happens in Acts chapter 2? The church is born and 3,000 people are gathered in to be believers in Christ Jesus. So we have the first big salvation experience. We have the church being born and this whole new way of life on the Feast of Pentecost as well. Some really significant things happen during these feasts in Old Testament history. Just don't have the time to get into it, but I'd love to get into it, but it's just for time's sake, we're not going to go through it. John will do a series on that sometime, I'm sure. So that's the spring feasts. Then we come around to the next 6 months of the calendar year, which is around the September time, the seventh month. So the first day of the seventh month is the Feast of Trumpets, just the Day of Trumpets. It's recorded for us in chapter 23, verse 23 to 25. And quite literally, a trumpet would be sounded. And that trumpet was signifying, once the nation of Israel came into the land of Eden, it was signifying that there's now going to be another gathering. So there's, inside the nation of Israel, there's three pilgrimage feasts around the period of Passover, around the period of Pentecost, and around the period of the Day of Atonement. And this first day of the seventh month was announcing, we're now in the new year. And there's going to be the Day of Atonement in 10 days, so everyone better get ready. So it's an announcement. It's time to get ready to come to the place where God sets his name in the land of Canaan. So this is what the Feast of Trumpets is really all about. It's announcing what's coming. It's announcing that there's going to be a gathering in now of the people. Then the next thing that happens, that's the first day of the month. Then on the 10th day of the 7th month, we have the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur. Chapter 23, verse 26 to 32. And again, we've already covered this in a lot of detail in a couple of sessions ago, so we won't cover much tonight. But that's one of the most significant days in the nation of Israel's history. It's a really, really important day in the nation of Israel. And then the next and the final feast then is on the 15th day of the 7th month, and it's called the Feast of Booths or Tabernacles or Ingathering. And it's recorded for us there in chapter 23, verse 33 to 43. And this happens after everything's gathered. This is the final harvest, okay? Verse 39 says in chapter 23, after everything is gathered in. So, there's nothing left, because what's about to happen is the rainy season is about to come, and not much grows because it's just rain, rain, rain. Winter's coming, so it's like, we got to get all... Now we've got everything in, so it's like that last... gathering in of everything, all the produce, all the agriculture is all going to come to an end because everything's gathered in. And so this day, this 15th day of the 7th month, is like the great celebration. It's the celebrating that on the Day of Atonement, our sins were dealt with. And it's celebrating the fact that God has graciously, bountifully provided for us once again. So it's this great, it's a week, it says in this chapter here, it's a week of rejoicing before the Lord. So it's a 7-day period of just pure rejoicing, celebrating God's goodness and his mercy, celebrating his grace, all that he's done in providing for us and atoning for our sins on the Day of Atonement. So it's a really great time. The 10th day of the month is a time of real mourning and real fear and awareness of sin. Then the 15th day is just, this is wonderful. We're God's people. Our sins have been atoned for. He's kindly and graciously provided for us all year. Let's celebrate and pray for more rain to come in the rainy season. And during the 7 days, the people of the land were to make booths. They were to make tents out of sticks and leaves. I've been to Israel during the Feast of Tabernacles. It's a whole lot of fun. It's a really exciting week of everyone just celebrating and everyone's together having a great time. And everyone's like, I think in the nation of Israel now, maybe the serious rabbis do it, but the normal quote-unquote Jewish people, they make a booth outside and they go there and eat with the friends and family, and then they go back to bed like in their house. So they don't do it like this anymore, but the idea was that they would celebrate. They would live inside this thing for 7 days of rejoicing and celebration, and it would be because they're remembering that, hey, remember when we were rescued from slavery and we lived in the wilderness and it was like really crazy. We had to live in booths for like 40 years. So that's why God's told him to do it. Remember that I looked after you for 40 years in the wilderness. I want to keep looking after you because you're my people. So the autumn feast then. So the autumn feast, again, they were an annual reminder of God's atonement of them from sin, God's protection of them in the wilderness, and God's provision for them in Canaan. So it's the constant reminder. Every year we're being reminded, God atones for our sin. God protected us in the wilderness. God provides for us in the land of Canaan. Let's continue to remember that. And most commentators, most people who run in the same circles as us, see these three feasts as not yet fulfilled. So there's a future day when the Feast of Trumpets, the gathering of the people of Israel, the Feast of Atonement, the day where they realize that the one whom they pierced is Jesus the Christ, the Messiah, and then the Day of Tabernacles, the millennium when Jesus Christ comes to rule and to reign. So that's what a lot of people believe about what these days are going to represent one day for the nation of Israel. Not necessarily for the church, because it's Israel's calendar. It's not my calendar. It's Israel's calendar. It's God's plan for the nation of Israel. So that's the feasts. And next time we're going to cover the Sabbaths. That's in chapter 25, a little bit in chapter 23, but mostly in chapter 25. And we have these Sabbath experiences that God calls his people to have. And so the first one we have is the normal weekly Sabbath day, not Sunday. Okay, so it was Friday 6 p.m. to Saturday 6 p.m. and still happens in Israel today. People are off work, and it's still quite a serious time actually in Israel. They blow an alarm that basically is like, everything stops now. The shops on Friday afternoon are absolutely chaos because everyone's getting ready for the Sabbath meal on Friday night. But it's Friday 6 p.m. to Saturday 6 p.m. is the Sabbath day. And so once every single week in the nation of Israel's story, they were to live as if Eden was truly restored, as if they were once again at rest with God. Now, remember, it's not a curse to work, because before the fall, Adam and Eve were called to work the garden. But part of the curse was that the work would become a toil, and it would become sorrowful, it would become hard, and the sweat of your brow until the day you die. So God, in his mercy and grace, gifted his people every single week a day off. And we're living in the 21st century, and we're like, we get 2 days off. We get Saturday and Sunday. But back then, this is totally unheard of. In fact, when the nation of Israel were exiled into Babylon, the Babylonians were like, what are you guys doing taking a day off every 7 days? This is really weird. Because remember that, you know, every month is a lunar thing. Every year is a sun thing. But the weekly calendar, it doesn't make any sense. There's no star or moon or sun that's like, and this is the beginning of the week, and this is the beginning of the week. So it doesn't make any sense to any other pagan nation. And yet every seventh day, Israel were just like, right, we're done for the day. And they're like, you're what? You're done? And we're like, yeah, we're not working. We're taking a day off. Why? Because our God gifted us a day off. Now, sadly, as we know, by the time of Christ in the world, legalism had crept heavily into the nation of Israel. And so there was a lot of enforced rules upon the Sabbath day, a lot of stipulations that were not actually required. And a lot of people began to think that people were created in order to keep the Sabbath day, rather than seeing that God had gifted the people the Sabbath day. Okay, the Sabbath day was a gift. It was a day of rest for everybody. You weren't allowed, your slave, your servant, your animals, everything had a day off. It was a beautiful day, as if Eden has truly been restored. That's the whole point of the Sabbath day. I know a lot of Christians still believe Sunday's the Sabbath. It's not. And a lot of people would put on some serious stipulations about the Sabbath. Well, those really aren't the most biblical things to be doing, because it's a day of rest. It's a gift from God to rest. That's all that it is, a merciful gift from God to rest in the Sabbath. Then we have in chapter 25, verse 1 to 7, a Sabbath year. And what that is that every single seventh year of the nation of Israel's history, they were supposed to not work the land for that whole year. And that's really bizarre. That doesn't make any sense in the world that we live in. Just like it doesn't make any sense to live in a booth for 7 days. Like, you know, every year we're just going to live in a tent for 7 days. And God's asking for strange things here, we can argue. And so we can argue here that every seventh year, God was saying, you're going to live this whole year and not farm your fields. You're not going to sow. You're not going to reap. You're not going to use your animals to do this stuff. You're not going to use your slaves and your servants to do this stuff. Everyone's off for the year. And the food that you eat is literally the food that you can go out to the field and get. And you're going to trust God that he's going to provide for you. You're going to trust that God every single seventh year is going to look after you. That the sixth year's harvest. So what God was asking for them to do is that every sixth year, he's saying, if you do this, then every sixth year, I promise I will provide so much food for you that you'll be able to eat the sixth year, the seventh year, and the eighth year. And so the nation of Israel were supposed to trust God and say, okay, you said it, we'll do it. We'll not work this whole year we'll not work the land. We'll just collect what there is and we'll use the food that was harvested last year. So every 7 years, the nation of Israel were being asked to live as if Eden had been restored for the whole year. Live as if they're living in the land, living in the garden, and God has truly come and it's all fixed for a year. That they're meant to live in the future hope of that and reflect that every 7 years. And then we have one of the most beautiful, significant periods of time in the nation of Israel, the year of Jubilee. That's recorded for us in chapter 25, verse 8 to 55. And this is just an absolutely, it's just an unbelievable year. It, humanly speaking, it makes absolutely no sense. but it's just, it's the most beautiful, before Christ comes, it's just that it's a glorious, glorious year. And what it is, it's 7 times 7 years. So again, 49 years and then into the 50th year. So on the 50th year, it's meant to be every single 50th year. On the Day of Atonement, a trumpet would be blown to announce the year of Jubilee. And it's an incredible year. I know I've said that already. It's a brilliant year, okay? What would happen on the year of Jubilee is that every Israelite who is a slave would be automatically set free. Automatically set free. So you've sold yourself to slavery because you owe a debt, and you can't pay the debt, so now you're a slave. On the Day of Jubilee, you're freed. You're no longer a slave. All your house were set free. It was just a beautiful, what an amazing experience. Everyone free on the Day of Jubilee. So that's the first thing that happens. The second thing that happens is all debts were cancelled. Could you imagine an economy in the modern era that says, okay, every 50 years we're gonna reset the whole structure, and there's gonna be no more debts. All the mortgages cancelled. All the credit cards cancelled. All the loans cancelled. All debts are cleared on this day. Absolutely incredible. And then the third thing that would happen was that all the land and all the houses outside of the city walls that had been bought by somebody else were restored to their original owners. So if you had to sell your house because you couldn't afford to live, and you had to sell your land because you were too poor to provide some period of time, and you sold it on, well, on the year of Jubilee, it was yours again. You got it back. You got your land back, and you got your house back. And none of this was manipulative, because everyone knew when Jubilee was going to be. Everyone knew when the 50th year was coming. And so people were calculating it. And God says you should calculate when the 50th year would be. So if someone's going to buy a house from you, they would work out, am I going to have this house for 50 years or for 1 year? And then, of course, the price would change depending on, like, I'm going to spend all this money and get it for a year. Great. But it's an incredible year. Everything was reset. All debts were cleared. All slaves were free. All possessions were restored. What a beautiful picture of the gospel, right? That Christ is our Jubilee, where he sets us free. He clears our debts and he restores us to what we were supposed to be before the master, Satan and sin, took it all from us through deceit. So, an incredible, absolutely incredible year. And within this period of time as well, there's commandments to redeem your brother, redeem your relative. If your brother is sold into slavery and you have the means to pay for his freedom, you should do that. Things like that are happening within these commandments. So these Sabbaths, the Sabbath day, the Sabbath year, the 50th year of the Sabbath, 50, the Jubilee, these were times of rest, times of restoration, times of debts being cleared, times of freedom. They were absolutely beautiful times. They were supposed to be anyway, living as if the Garden of Eden had fully returned to the world. Living as if it's, because it is coming one day, and they were living, they were changing every week. We're going to live as if it's, we're going to remind ourselves that one day it's going to be like this forever. And in every seventh year, we're going to remind ourselves that one day it's going to be like this forever. And then every 50th year, we're living and we're going to remind ourselves that this is going to be forever one day. God's going to bring this forever one day. And so that's what it was. It was constantly remembering God's going to come and fix all the brokenness. He's going to come and fix all the toil. And he's going to give us true rest. He's going to fix slavery one day and give us all true freedom. He's going to fix debt and he's going to clear it one day. So we're remembering that through these different Sabbath occasions, what God's going to one day do when Jesus Christ comes in all of his glory. So they were living as if God says through chapter 23 and chapter 25, the land of Israel is my land and the people of Israel are my people. And so they're not your people to do what you want with. And it's not your land to do what you want with. I've gifted you the land and you're my people. So you don't mistreat the land and you don't mistreat any of my people because I own it. And they were to live as if that was true. It's all good. Sadly, however, as we read the rest of the biblical narrative, so as we get out of Leviticus and we get into Numbers and get into the land of Canaan eventually in Joshua, read right up to Kings and into the prophets, we see that the people of Israel never did these things. They totally failed in every way to do these things. They worked on the Sabbath day. Many multiple times that was trying to be dealt with by different prophets. They were working on the Sabbath day. They profaned my Sabbath day, God said. They didn't celebrate the feast properly. So there's times where some of the kings of Israel were like, man, we're supposed to be celebrating these feasts and we haven't done it for like 70 years. What's going on? And they would try and fix all that. So they didn't do the feast properly. They didn't give the land a year of rest every 7 years. And that's actually one of the reasons why God made the exile period the period it was. So he's like, okay, so you've been in the land for this long, and every 7 years you're supposed to be given the land a year of rest, and you haven't from this period to this period. Therefore, you're going to be in exile 70 years because that's all the, you've missed 70 Sabbath years. And so it's going to be, the land's getting rest from you guys for 70. All right. You haven't given it one. So they're getting 70 all in a row. So they didn't allow for that 7 year thing. And also what we see is that they didn't practice the year of Jubilee. So even though they were given all of these wonderful opportunities to celebrate and to live as God's people in God's land, as if God had fully come in all of his glory, they could not do it. They failed on every level. And so I'm just so thankful that I live on the other side of the New Testament and I see that Jesus Christ is the Lord of the Sabbath. He's given me true rest. He's the Lord of redemption. He's given me true freedom from slavery. He's the forgiver. He's cleared my debts. And he's given me everything that this was meant to represent. And one day he's going to come in all of his glory and continue all this to give the land, to give new creation its fullness. And this world will experience the true rest and the true freedom that he will bring. And so it's just a wonderful day that we're waiting for when all these things finally come into their fullness. So that's Leviticus 23 to 25. Again, as God commands the people that are his to live as if they're his. They couldn't because Jesus hadn't yet come to give them the strength to do that and to clear their debts of sin on the cross. So that's it for tonight. That's chapter 23 to 25.